With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Application to Bellhaven University and let us help you today.
Data message rates apply national contest. It's Unicorn Cash Time on 92.9. Every hour, weekdays from 7 a.m. through 7 p.m. and right now.
All right, this hour's word is tamper. Text the word tamper, T-A-M-P-E-R. Text that word right now to 72881 for your chance to win $1,000 right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. Again, your word is tamper, T-A-M-P-E-R. Text that word right now to 72881 for your chance to win $1,000. I'll have another word for you at 3 o'clock. Good luck.
Now, it's Jeffrey Wright on 92.9 FM ESPN, Memphis's sports station.
I'm out of love. Happy Wednesday to you wherever you may be. As the introduction indeed suggests, my name is indeed Jeffrey Wright. You can always follow me on Twitter at JWright929ESPN. I'm joined by my partner in crime, producer of the program, at CDunning929 on Twitter. Connor Dunning, good day, sir.
Good day to you.
So everyone, we got coming up here on the program. In just a moment, Neil McCready is going to join the program. He's been kind enough to join us at the top of the show each and every day this week. Neil McCready is an AP voter for the top 25 in terms of college basketball. We're going to start with Neil, and where indeed he'd have the Memphis Tigers ranked if they do indeed close out Lester Quinones, Precious Achiuwa, and R.J. Hampton. Gary Parrish has updated his top 25 and one. Memphis Tigers have cracked the top five. We'll get into that and so much more with Neil here in just a moment. Make sure you're listening at the top of each and every hour right here on 92.9 FM ESPN for your chance to win $1,000, the Unicorn Cash Code. 7 a.m. till 7 p.m. Make sure you're listening at the top of the 3 o'clock hour. Connor's going to give you another Unicorn Cash Code for your chance to win $1,000. Then Bill Bunder's going to join the program. We'll ask him his thoughts on his post-spring football top 25. There's a coach out there that's considered an elite football coach. I think this year could be a pivotal year in terms of how his career goes. We'll get Bill's thoughts on that. We'll tell you that coach is. Kevin Pelton's going to join us. We'll get into the NBA, of course, with KP when he joins us around 3:25. We'll get into some big stories from our Google Doc to close out the show. Then we'll make way for the man that does the top 25 in one, one of your foremost experts on ranking college basketball teams, whether it be May, whether it be the end of April. GP will take over the airwaves at 4 o'clock. Now, however, we welcome on the man that, of course, is the host of the Oxford Exxon podcast. It's available each and every weekday, iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud. Also the host of the greatest pod in the South that he does with J.G. Tate, as well as Gabe DeYarman. That's available each and every week, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher. You know where to go and find all of those fantastic podcast options. Also, make sure you follow him on Twitter, at Neil McCready. Neil, we started the show mentioning it. Gary has now released his top 25 and one. He mentioned it yesterday at the start of his program that, indeed, if the University of Memphis were to close out the class with Lester Quinones, Precious Achiuwa, and R.J. Hampton, three prospects that, according to 24/7 Sports, the Memphis Tigers lead for all three. Should they land those three, they would be in a class of only Duke and a little program called Kentucky to have that many five stars. And in his top 25 and one, he has already essentially decided that the Tigers are expected to add, indeed, those three players already to James Wiseman, to DJ Jeffries, to Malcolm Dandridge, and more. I'll ask you, you're an AP top 25 voter. I know you weren't thinking about what were you going to do with your ballot right here on May the 1st. But I'll ask you, what do you think? Where would the Tigers fall for you?
My initial thought is that you'd start to you know, it's hard to answer that in a complete vacuum, obviously, because you have to look at other teams and who returned what and who's bringing what in and all of those kind of things. But you would certainly put them in a little pool to start with of probably 10 teams, you know, and then you'd have to figure out where you'd stack them in that 10 in a preseason poll. You know, again, you know, I'm not one to argue with Gary. He's got him at 5, and he knows more about that around the country than I do. I would have to put them in that group and then start my research. You know, obviously you, but you're talking about a team that would have the type of talent that normally Duke has, that normally, as you said, Kentucky has, that sometimes North Carolina has, that sometimes maybe Villanova has the last couple of years. You're talking about a team full of 5-star guys. You're talking about a team that features James Wiseman, who is certainly a candidate to be the number one pick in next year's draft. It's got other guys that I'm sure have one-and-done aspirations, one-and-done plans going in. It's yeah, that's where you'd start. You'd put them probably 5 to 10-ish based just on the fact that it wasn't a tournament team last season. It wasn't a team that went to the tournament. But they're bringing in a bunch of guys and who are recruited by everyone. So, yeah, that's probably – I mean, look, it might be as high as where Gary has it, but it probably wouldn't be any lower than 10. So 5 to 10 in a preseason poll, especially in a in a poll that doesn't matter because it has no bearing whatsoever on the bracket when the bracket's put out. But, yeah, that's where they'd be.
For those that are curious, according to 24/7 Sports, their composite ranking that takes all the respected – recruiting sites, and it averages out the recruiting classes. Kentucky and Duke have traded the top spot all the way dating back to 2015. So that does show you the class that the Tigers would be in if they could perhaps get all the way as high as number one. Should they add these three prospects, I believe the numbers add up to where the Tigers would have the number one recruiting class in the country. But as we mentioned right there, Neil, those teams that we mentioned right there, Duke and Kentucky. I do think it's fascinating, though, when you think about the amount of talent that is entering into the program when you consider this many 5-stars, but these have been teams that have made the second weekend pretty easily, and yeah. Duke this year certainly was certainly one of the most must-see teams, and that's largely thanks to Zion Williamson. But yet again, that wasn't a Final Four team. So if we look at the teams that have been largely constructed with this type of talent, it does seem to be that barring injury, you typically make it to the second weekend, but we've also seen it be very difficult for those teams to get all the way to the Final Four and beyond. Really, I think the last team that did it was Duke in 2015. Kentucky has always made a case, but yet again, they've just come up short. Yet again, another Elite Eight appearance this year. But for you, let's say that indeed the Tigers do add Lester Quinones. They do indeed add Precious Achiuwa, and that they do indeed add R.J. Hampton already to what they have in the signing class. What is a reasonable expectation from someone that's not a fan, someone like you, that just sits there and watches college basketball?
Well, they become must-watch television right off the bat. They become a fascinating story because everyone wants to watch Wiseman anyway. Wiseman was going to be, to some degree, must-see TV regardless of where he went. The fact that he's playing for Penny Hardaway in his basically in his hometown with the number one ranked class in the country, a bunch of young kids, it makes it even more must-see TV. They become quite the story. We talked about yesterday. There will be people around the country in the coaching business who will be cheering very much against them because they want this to fail. They need this to fail. Others who are who just love the game, this will be a at the very least a curiosity. I mean, if you're sitting at home in Des Moines, Iowa, and Memphis comes on with all these kids, you say, "Hey, I'm going to see this." You may not be for Memphis, you may not be against Memphis, but you're watching it, going, "I want to see how this works." So on that level, it's be easy to market, and ESPN and those type people would absolutely market them. I'm sure they'll come up with some sort of a nickname and all of that stuff and market those kids. Now, from a coaching standpoint, here's where this is interesting to me. I've heard obviously I cover Ole Miss as my main job, and so I was around Kermit Davis a lot in his first year at Ole Miss, and on a couple of different occasions, Kentucky's team came up this past season. Obviously, when Ole Miss played them in Oxford, and then Kermit Davis and I were talking about Kentucky again the day before the SEC tournament began in Nashville. And one of the things that he said that really stuck with me, because I've heard other people kind of say this too, is one of the things they admire most about John Calipari and the job that he's done at Kentucky is he takes these all freshman teams just about every year, and he gets all of those egos in one room, and somehow he's been able to consistently, not every year, but pretty consistently, get those kids to do two things. One, he gets some of them to agree to take a lesser role for the betterment of the team. And then two, and this is the big thing, this is the thing that Kermit Davis was so impressed with, he gets all of those kids, most of whom are kids who, throughout their development, from pick an age, 11, 12, 13, throughout their development, they were the go-to scorer on their team. They were the guy on their high school team, on their AAU team, that put up the points. He got those guys to play defense at a really high level, at a physical level, to play defense cohesively in a way that many of them had never really played before. Oh, they'd played defense in spurts. But he got them to play defense as a group. And Kermit Davis talked about that's what made Kentucky so difficult to beat. That's what made Kentucky a title contender. And they absolutely were a title contender this last season with Washington and Hero and all those guys. So that's going to be the two challenges and the thing that will be most interesting to kind of follow with Penny Hardaway and this group, assuming that he gets Quinones and Hampton and these guys. If he gets all these guys to come in, there's only one ball. So, number one, you know right off the bat that you've probably, and this is going to come across the wrong way, and I don't mean for it to, but you've made promises, and I'm not talking about benefits and crap. I'm talking about you've made promises about playing time, about things like that. Hey, you're going to get your points. You're going to get your exposure. The NBA is going to see you. All the stuff that every coaching staff tells kids. But you've told all of these kids this, presumably. And so they all come in. And someone at all times is going to be disgruntled because someone at Kentucky at all times is kind of disgruntled. They're going to practice. They're not getting the minutes that they're used to. They're not getting the role that they're used to. They're concerned that all these people, you know, when they leave the practice court, they go home. When they leave a game, their family's on the phone with them. How come you only played 9 minutes? How come you only got two shots? That kind of thing. These are guys that are used to playing 32 minutes and getting however many shots they wanted to get. So you've got to keep those kind of things. You got to keep people happy. You have to keep people working hard, and you have to keep people bought in on the defensive end. And that's all about coaching and about running a program. And that's what's going to be most interesting is because John Calipari, for example, and Mike Krzyzewski is another example. They've been doing this for a long time. There's been a lot of trial and error. They sort of have a system. We'll find out whether Penny Hardaway can do it. The one thing that you know is that he doesn't have a system to do it. He's never done it before. He doesn't have the benefit of personal trial and error running a team that's that talented, that's got that many egos, that has that many. Every one of these kids has a support system, family, AAU coaches, brothers, uncles, whatever, who are going to the games to watch their guy play. Yeah, they're there for the team, but they're there for their guy. And all of those people are unhappy if their guy is not getting the role that they thought their guy should get. That's the stuff that coaches have to manage. That's the hard part of coaching. Just determining when to call a timeout, managing your timeouts, determining whether you're going to go 2-3 zone here or whether you're going to stay in man, that's the easy part of coaching. The managing people, the assaging of egos, just keeping people fairly happy, bought in, and playing hard on the defensive end is the difficult part. And that's what that will look, it's a problem. In other words, he's going to have a problem that 99% of the coaches in the country would absolutely love to have. Hell, they might kill to have. But it is absolutely going to be something that will be fascinating to watch, because as of this moment, Penny Hardaway does not have a proven track record in handling it. Of course, before you can get a proven track record, you have to do it once. Then you have to do it twice. So this is his first opportunity to do it once. It doesn't mean he's never done it before or that he can't do it. It just means that he's not done this before, and it will be fascinating to watch to see how he manages that over the course of a season. Because like any season, they'll have some valleys, they'll have some highs. And then freshmen sometimes hit the wall a little bit, and you've got to manage that. So there's a lot there. There'll be a lot on his plate, but man, it'll be a plate that he'll be looking forward to diving into.
Well, to your point, you know, for those that have been around the Kentucky program this year, most point to one of the turning points when Kentucky did not start the season particularly well. Of course, they got the doors blown off them against Duke in game one, but then they never really looked right early in the season. There are a lot of people that are around that Kentucky program that said, hey, when Kwadae Green, when he left that team, it ended up helping Kentucky. And so you got to wonder, did Cal do what Cal does, in which he suggested, hey, there's the door. Don't let it hit you.
Well, you know, here's the other interesting thing now that you bring this up. One of the similarities between Kentucky and Memphis that will be kind of interesting is – here it is, May the 1st, right? And we're talking Memphis basketball. You know, if you're Jay Wright at Villanova, and this guy's won a couple of titles, recruited a pretty high level. He's got a really good team. They'll be a contender. But Jay Wright's not dealing with media scrutiny on May the 1st. And frankly, even at the beginning of the season, he's got some time to kind of sort things out because there's other stuff going on. He's got the Eagles. He's got the Phillies pursuing free agents. He's got the Flyers doing stuff. He's got the Sixers starting their season. There's just stuff going on. He doesn't – if you're Memphis, you're Penny Hardaway, and you open that season on November the 11th or whatever against whoever, it's getting talked about on these airwaves the entire day the next day. It's really the only – it's the main point of conversation. It may be the only point of conversation. Everyone's going to pick it apart, pick every game apart, every nuance of that team gets picked apart. That's the way Kentucky is. I've heard Cal talk about it, and he's exactly right. Kentucky loses a game, and it's the end of the world. He's got to go manage that. He's got a team full of guys that hear that, oh, God, the season's over. They lost to Duke in a game on December 1, or they lost to Michigan, or whatever. It's a long season, yet it's every game is a Super Bowl, if you will. And that's one of the things that – and listen, it's great for ticket sales. It's great for all the different things, but it will absolutely be something that Hardaway will have to manage. That, you know, a coach at Purdue Virginia doesn't have to manage.
No, I think it's fascinating because on top of that, as you mentioned, you know, Cal's got that entire juggling act. Plus, he's got to figure out which job can he reasonably throw his name into the hat so that even though when he inevitably has a disappointing end to the season, therefore everyone can still beg for him to come back. And you got to admit, that's a very, very difficult balancing act.
It is. I give the guy a lot of credit, though, on that kind of thing. He's able to play that card whenever he needs to play that card. And even though people know the card is coming and that the card is bogus, he still plays it to his advantage. And listen, you got to respect the player a little bit right there.
Oh, well, you know full well. You've known me long enough to know that when you can play that card, you absolutely play that card. Because
when you have leverage, you play the leverage card. I don't begrudge John Calipari that. I mean, I know that it's not popular to say that on Memphis airwaves, but he's a genius when it comes to that. But he does not get enough credit. I'm telling you, he does not get enough credit for the job that he does almost every year, bringing in this new group of kids that all have the exact same perception of themselves walking in the door, which is, I'm a lottery pick in 9 months. I'm going to the NBA. I'm going to be one of the first five guys taken. I'm going to be the starting fill-in-the-blank position for the Sacramento Kings or the whoever in 1 year. This is my team. I'm going to shine. And there's five, six other guys that think the exact same thing. And he's got to get, over a period of months, he's got to get those guys to buy into smaller roles for the betterment of the team. And he's been able to do it. Krzyzewski's been able to do it. It's a hard thing to do. Not everyone can pull that off.
Well, especially when you're not Coach USA. But another interesting aspect of it, I think, is when you look at what Penny Hardaway's philosophy has been in terms of scheme and whatnot he does with this basketball team. You know, he has mentioned, hey, we want to get up tempo. And it has been, you know, Cal has consistently mentioned this, that if I have these elite guys and if I can get them to play elite level defense, they're good enough that eventually we can score enough points. But if I can get them to defend, then I've got a chance to be really, really, really good. And will be interesting, because I'm not saying that Penny Hardaway has not emphasized defense, because that has not been the case. That would be disingenuous to suggest as much. But much of it has been, you know, the up-tempo, the excitement. Do you think it would be possible that, I guess what I'm asking is, do you think the best formula for having this young talent and this, you know, this NBA-level talent, do you think the best formula is build it on the defensive end first?
Yeah, the goal is to win, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to get into the tournament with a team that can defend at a really high level. And like you said, the talent probably works itself out on the offensive end. Kentucky's always going to have guys who can score. Can they always have guys who will defend? Who, when a game comes down to those last two or three possessions, they do their job. They're able to turn it up on defense. They're able to play consistently on defense, wear a team down. I know they lost to Auburn and stuff, and you know, he's lost games, and there are people at Kentucky that aren't happy with him. But for the most part, over the course of a season, year in and year out, Kentucky's one of the better defensive teams in the SEC. And that will be the challenge that Penny Hardaway has. Can he get guys can he get guys who maybe in the back of their minds are a little bit frustrated that they aren't getting all the shots they want because there's so many guys that want shots? Can he get all of those guys to defend?
And this is another thing.
Now, look, hey, yeah. He's got the advantage of a bench.
Oh, absolutely. Because
you can always say, hey, look, there's a guy ready to play. We got a guy right here who's a 4-star, 5-star, whatever. He's ready to take your minutes. If you're not going to defend, I'm going to sit you. So there's always that motivation. Don't get me wrong. He's the boss. It's a great problem to have. I mentioned Kermit Davis. He'd kill for that problem. But it's still something you have to manage.
Oh, there's no question about that. Okay, so it's May the 1st, and as we mentioned, you know, most recruiting insiders agree that Memphis wouldn't trade their positioning with Quiñones, with Achiuwa, with Hampton, really for anyone else on the board right here on May 1. Penn has not been put to paper. I want to ask you this. In terms of the long-term view of Penny Hardaway's basketball program, in your opinion, how important is it to close on this class?
Oh, I mean, it's very important. I mean, this is the class that, you know, because of Wiseman's presence in it, this is the class that if you can surround him with the right type of talent and make a run for it, this is the chance for you to change the brand of your program, to make you a national program again, where you can consistently, year in and year out, go out and recruit national players. Is it the end of the world if they only get two of the three or one of the three? No, of course not. They're still going to be very, very good. But if, you know, if the goal is to absolutely strike hot and be a second weekend, maybe third weekend team in year one, where the story is this white hot program from Memphis that just 2 years ago was basically non-existent and now has, you know, 2-3 lottery picks and whatnot, then yeah, absolutely. This is your opportunity because of Wiseman. Because odds are Wiseman isn't going to be there for 2 years. So this is your opportunity to absolutely catapult yourself in terms of prominence and stature and recruiting presence and stuff. Now's your chance. Sure. But if you don't get a couple of those guys, it doesn't mean that the window closes, for goodness sake. I mean, he's proven that that they're going to be in big-time races. You're never going to win every recruiting race. Never. No program. Duke doesn't do it. Kentucky doesn't do it. So Memphis isn't going to do it. But it's certainly a big opportunity for him, yeah.
Okay, meanwhile, in a federal courtroom in New York City, the prosecution is expected to rest its case against Christian Dawkins and Merrill Code today. Dan Wetzel of Yahoo Sports, he suggested that Dawkins might indeed take the stand in his own defense once the defense pleads its case. If indeed Christian Dawkins takes the stand, outside of the people in that courtroom, who's going to be most interested in what Dawkins will say under oath?
It appears that, Dawkins is going to testify today. If that happens, there's two groups of, people that are fascinated in this. One, there's a handful of coaches. Sean Miller, maybe even more than that. Will Wade. If I'm Ben Howland, I'm a little nervous. There's coaches all over the country that are probably kind of nervous. And then there's a group of coaches around the country that, you know, the popcorn gif?
Mm-hmm.
They got theirs popping.
Oh, yeah.
They're popping their popcorn. They're turning their phone.
They're getting
off
comfy on that couch.
Yeah, they are. They're settling in. They would pay – those people would pay – they pay a significant price to get the pay-per-view stream of those courtroom proceedings. And they'd close the door and close the blinds and pop their popcorn and open a beverage of their choosing and sit back and, watch in absolute glee as they know that some of their colleagues who have skirted the rules or in some cases just assaulted the rules, as they would love to watch them squirm.
You mentioned Sean Miller. Recording of a phone call was played today in the corruption trial, and it essentially accused Sean Miller of paying $10,000 a month to DeAndre Ayton. Is there any chance Sean Miller survives this?
Okay, so here's the thing.
All right.
I believe every word of this.
Yeah.
I think most reasonable people believe it. Now, so it comes back to, well, you can't prove anything. Okay. As of this moment, have you technically proven anything?
Not really, no. I mean, I guess that would technically be up to a jury, but that's not the trial that's going on.
Right. So no, you haven't necessarily, but we all know what happened. So we're, like I said yesterday on the show, we're going to find out at some point in the next several months, maybe it's a year, we're going to find out whether the NCAA is truly willing to turn a blind eye to obvious evidence. Or is the NCAA going to dive into this and investigate multiple programs and issue a statement? Or is the NCAA going to come back and say, it's obvious that the system is broken, it's obvious that this is rampant, and we've got to fix it, and so we're going to go in and we're essentially going to rewrite our Constitution as it pertains to amateurism. Now, if you believe that's going to happen, hey, good for you. I don't. As someone who's covered the NCAA and stuff, I don't believe that that's in their DNA. I don't know that they have the manpower to investigate every program that's come up in this courtroom. I just don't know that they literally have the bodies, Jeffrey, to pull that off. So it stands to reason that they're going to sort through all of this stuff, and they're going to cherry pick two or three programs to go in and try to hammer, because that's what they do. They convict you, and then they go in and they gather the case to support the conviction to the best of their ability so that it somewhat passes the public smell test, so that they can then turn around and hold a conference call that says, we are the guardians of the game. And
don't forget the PR video that accompanies that.
Yes, we are the guardians of the game, and we know what happened, and we have stopped this. We have the iron fist of justice has been we've crushed Stony Brook basketball, and this will not stand. Mm-hmm. So they're gonna pick some programs to hammer. They have lots to choose from. There's going to be pressure on them, though, especially if. Look, Arizona's a blue blood to some degree. There's going to be pressure on them to hammer in Arizona. Just getting rid of Miller doesn't do it. It's a program that very clearly, unless you believe that every word that Book Richardson and Christian Dawkins and these people are saying, unless you believe that everything they're saying is a complete lie, the NCAA somewhat has no choice but to go into Tucson and dig deep.
If you're a coach if you're one of those coaches that you mentioned that you've been popping the popcorn, you're settling in and you're hoping that this courtroom would somehow make, you know, court TV and whatnot, and that you could watch a live stream of the proceedings that's going on. Are you hoping Christian Dawkins takes the stand?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. if you want your sport, look, your sport's never going to be, quote, clean. But if you're hoping that your sport develops enough cleanliness that the playing field gets leveled to some degree so that this is not absurd, and a coach taking $10,000 a month of his own money to pay a player is absurd on any level. And hey, good for DeAndre Ayton for getting it, but it doesn't make it any less absurd. So yes, you want him to take the stand. You want him to spill his guts. You want him to put everything out there so that the NCAA has no choice but to do one of two things. Either eradicate the current system and do something that's actually common sense where the players get paid and you come up with some way to do that, which is a lot of work. Or where the NCAA comes in and says, nope, it's one thing to speed. It's another thing to go 50 over. It's kind of like a highway patrolman, right? I mean, if you pulled over every person who goes 4 or 5 miles per hour over the speed limit, you're going to be really busy that day.
Well, you're going to be pulling over yourself, too.
Yeah, but you know, when the speed limit's 70 and the car's going 76, maybe you kind of look at it so that you try to get the driver's attention. I'm guessing, I've never been a highway patrolman.
It also depends on if it depends if the monthly quota's up or not. I mean, you know, there's concerns.
But when the guy goes flying by at 115,
mm-hmm.
everyone on the road, even the guy who drives 75 or 80, when the guy goes, if you're going 77 in a 70, you know you're kind of breaking the law and your eyes are watching the road and stuff. But when the guy flies by you going 115, what do you say? You say, that's dangerous. Someone needs to get him off the roads.
Yeah,
that's what coaches want. Coaches want the 115 speeder off the road.
Yeah, I completely agree. When we come back, the Los Angeles Times has a story on the UCLA coaching search. In that story included the tidbit that Rick Barnes not only agreed to take the UCLA coaching job, he also agreed to the terms of the buyout, only to go back, ask for more money before finally, after that, UCLA pulled the offer. He eventually came back and said, no, I'll take it again. He ended up moving on. We'll ask Neil, what does he make of all this? Why would Rick Barnes do this? And we'll maybe stick out in L.A. because Reggie Bush made some very public comments about a coach that's having to spend some time with his family conveniently out in L.A. Would he be the new USC coach? We'll ask all of this and more with Neil when we come back right here on 92.9 FM ESPN.
It's Unicorn Cash.
Yeah!
Your chance to win $1,000 with the cash code on 92.9. Coming up at 3 p.m.
If you want wings in Memphis, they're not hard to find. There are dozens of places all over town. The Wing Guru is but one. And yes, the Wing Guru is a little more expensive than most other wing joints. And yes, the Wing Guru might take a little longer to get your wings to your table than most other wing joints. But guess what? It's worth it. The fresh ingredients, the premium oils, and the cook-to-order approach make it all worth it. This is Gary Parrish asking a simple question. Do you want okay wings or great wings? Do you have the patience necessary to get the perfection you desire? If so, pop into one of the Wing Guru's two locations and experience it for yourself. One is at $56.99 Mount Moriah. The other is at $71.99 Stage Road. And if you can't make it to either location for whatever reason, just have the Wing Guru delivered by ordering via DoorDash at wingguru.com. That's the wingguru.com. Do yourself a favor and go see what everybody in the city is talking about. A locally owned wing franchise launched by University of Memphis basketball legend Billy Richmond. If you take pride in supporting local, support the Wing Guru. That's the Wing Guru online, thewingguru.com. Again, thewingguru.com.
I'm John Morgan of Morgan & Morgan. An accident takes seconds to occur. Then what should take a great deal of time and research sometimes only takes a day. What lawyer should I hire? Sometimes the firm you hire does many things: bankruptcy, immigration, criminal defense, right there on their website. Would you hire a pediatrician to do your heart surgery? Of course not. This will be a life-changing decision, and all lawyers are not the same, not even close. Our firm is an open book. You know us by over 30 years of reputation. If you want to know what a case like yours may be worth, visit ForThePeople.com and look at the offers made and verdicts returned by juries for cases like yours. Hundreds of them. The proof is in the pudding. Your lawyer may have never been to court, or rarely. And listen, just because you hired the wrong firm in a rush days after your accident doesn't mean you can't fire them before it's too late. Look before you leap. There is only one Morgan & Morgan. On your cell phone, dial #law, #529, #law, that's all.
Have you heard? Orion Federal Credit Union is redefining banking with their 4% checking account. Visit OrionFCU.com for details. Conditions apply: 0.05% APY on portion of balance above $30,000.
Prescription products
products require an online physician consultation and are only available if the physician determines a prescription is appropriate. See website for full details and safety information.
Guys, do you have trouble going the distance? Do you crescendo too soon? Arrive at the party too early? Is your alphabet A, B?
Oops.
Does your firecracker go off before the 4th? Then you need to go quick as a bunny to 4hims.com because 4hims offers treatments for PE and access to doctors who can evaluate you for prescription options. And right now, get started for just $10. No in-office doctor's visits, no trips to the pharmacy, no high prices. Just the help you want to keep going and going and going and going.
Hurry to 4hims.com and slow down. To get started at this incredible $10 price, go to 4hims.com/distance. The only way to get this special offer is to go to 4hims.com/distance. FORHIMS.com/DISTANCE.
Here's Tony Romo for Skechers Slip-On Footwear.
I like to make my life easy. I got a car that can drive itself, a robot that vacuums my whole house.
Carpet has been cleaned.
And Skechers Slip-Ons. They don't have laces, so I can just slip them on and off with ease. And they take comfort to another level. They're flexible, breathable, and have Skechers air-cooled memory foam. Plus, they come in a wide variety of current styles. Skechers Slip-Ons. You'll never want to wear anything else.
Try Skechers Slip-Ons with air-cooled memory foam today. Skechers. Comfort included.
Around here, everyone knows you need the right tool for the job. It's the difference between orders filled and orders missed, between return customers and product returns. That's why I order from Grainger. With over 250 local branches, will call product pickup, and a time-saving mobile app, it's easy to get it right. When it comes to getting what you need, when you need it, Grainger's got your back. Call, click Grainger.com, or stop by to see for yourself. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Now, we're back with Jeffrey Wright on 92.9 FM ESPN, Memphis' sports station.
Coming up at the top of the next hour, Connor's going to give you another chance to win $1,000. It's Unicorn Cash right here on 92.9 FM ESPN, 7 a.m. till 7 p.m. Make sure you listen to the top of each and every hour for your chance to get a Unicorn Cash code. Text that to 72881 for your chance to win $1,000. You're listening to 99 FM ESPN. Jeffrey Wright joined by Neil McCready. Neil, of course, the host of the Oxford Exxon podcast, the greatest pod in the South. He's on Twitter at Neil McCready. Neil is one of the foremost experts on all things coaching carousel. And this didn't really get the coaching carousel rolling, but I did find it fascinating because Neil has seen just about everything that you could see on this front. And I thought this was a very interesting story, Neil. The LA Times was trying to dig in just what exactly happened with UCLA's much maligned coaching search that, of course, wound up getting Mick Cronin. But included in that story, that was a very extensive story, primarily on the search, there were a couple of paragraphs on Rick Barnes. And what I thought was very interesting in that story is, initially, when they contacted Rick Barnes, Rick Barnes not only agreed to the salary, they agreed to buyout terms, and he basically took the job. And the story that we got from Rick a couple of weeks ago was, well, the deal fell through. And you and I have discussed it, I know off the air, I don't believe we discussed it on the air. That was interesting to see. You and I both agree in transparency. That one felt a little unnecessary in the transparency department, but I at least took note of it because I remember thinking, yo, he didn't get trapped into that. Like that struck me as interesting because I thought there was a message involved in that. And so now we're starting to see this story develop for UCLA. And I do think it's important to note, with it being an LA Times story, and I'm not here shooting the messenger, I'm just saying it seems more than likely most of the sourcing from this story would probably come from UCLA sources. And I'm also not even disputing the way that it was reported, because the truth is, I think it was a well-reported story. But on the flip side, you also have to remember, okay, well, UCLA is telling the story that they want to tell. And what I thought was interesting about it was, okay, Barnes agrees to take it. Then he comes back and says he wants more money. UCLA pulls the offer. And after pulling the offer, Barnes comes back and says, okay, I'll go back to the original deal we had. And then, according to the story, UCLA said thanks, but no thanks. I'll ask you this. What do you think is Rick Barnes's motivation with, I'm not saying that he was a source on the story, but something doesn't add up, right?
Yeah, it tells you a couple things. It tells you, number one, that he wanted to take the job, that in hindsight he probably wishes he had taken the job, and that he's unhappy with something in Knoxville. And I'm guessing that something is a former football coach.
Mm-hmm. That seems more than likely, because that former football coach has now become the athletic director, and that is not the athletic director that hired Rick Barnes.
Yeah, it's not. And, you know, we did talk about this when it was going on, in those days where a lot of people in the Tennessee media would come out and say, hey, you know, if he moves to California, he's going to pay more taxes. Mm-hmm. He's going to have to pay more for a house. And my attitude with that was always, yeah, but we're talking about $5 million, and we're not talking about forever. And, yeah, you pay more for the house, but when you sell the house, you get most of that back. That's usually how real estate works. So I thought he wanted to take the job. It becomes obvious that at one point he did take the job, and then he's had a pretty good run at Tennessee. You know, they've had a couple of good teams. He's put a lot of sweat equity into that program. I know he likes some of the kids. He's got a chance at having a really good team coming back, all of those things. And so I'm sure when he went to talk to people at Tennessee, they sweetened the offer a little bit or whatnot. Maybe he went back to UCLA. Maybe that part of the story is true. He went back to UCLA and said, well, Tennessee offered me this, and that's when UCLA said, well, we're out, which is terrible negotiation on Barnes's part. Once you've agreed to take the job at a price, take the job. Because things can only kind of go bad from there. But letting it get out like this now, and I would not be surprised at all if Rick Barnes were one of the sources that the LA Times talked to, is sending a message to Fulmer. It's sending a message to Tennessee that says, you know, I didn't take this one. I might take the next one. Because this isn't working, and I don't know where Fulmer stands on it. I would assume that he wants to have a very successful basketball program. They've got a huge facility there. They make more money if they fill it up, all of those things. I just wonder if maybe basketball isn't important enough to him. I don't know. He's been at Texas before, where football was every bit as dominating over basketball as it is at Tennessee. So. And it might just be a personality clash. And it could also be, Jeffrey, as simple as he went back to UCLA thinking he'd make more money, thinking that they wanted him so bad that when Tennessee upped the offer, he could say, okay, now match this, and UCLA called his bluff.
Yeah, I've also questioned, though, on the flip side of this, I understand if you're UCLA, you kind of want to get your story out there. And especially if you're UCLA, I got to imagine your feelings were hurt because – and I believe rightfully so, a lot of the stories that were written about UCLA's coaching search was how poorly it was handled. And I'm sure they wanted to kind of control the narrative and start to say, well, we want to tell our side. But meanwhile, you have the story that's written about that entire coaching search. And one of the stories that's catching the most attention is this Rick Barnes aspect of it. The guy you didn't hire as your head coach, and now you've got Mick Cronin. Isn't this just kind of awkward for Mick Cronin now? I mean, I guess you're still a coach, so who cares? But I still think it's weird.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you weren't anywhere close to the first choice, and that can be awkward until you win. If you win, it doesn't matter. If you're smart and you have any PR skill, you win. And every time that someone asks a question about the winning that you're doing, you say, "Oh shucks, you know, I don't know. I'm lucky I got the job. I mean, I'm fortunate that 7 people turned it down before me," and you start growing that number. And every time you talk about it, it's like, yeah, you know, I was the 28th choice, but it worked out and blah, blah, blah. And everybody gets a kick out of it and likes you and stuff. I don't know that Cronin has that personality, so he probably won't take advantage of that. The part that I always found interesting with this job search, as it pertains to Barnes, is that the story that came out initially was they had agreed to terms, but they couldn't, but UCLA balked at the buyout. And now this is UCLA sort of saying, hey, we agreed to the buyout. We had the buyout worked out. After we agreed to terms and we agreed to the buyout, he had the audacity to go out and say, hey, I want more. And we balked at that, which makes Barnes look like kind of the bad guy, and UCLA look like they were running a far more competent search than some of the national people who covered it said they were running. So I'd love to know whether the truth is in the middle here or if the truth is indeed in this UCLA, in this LA Times story about the UCLA search. Because if it is, all of a sudden you kind of have to back off some of the criticism of UCLA that they were, you know, that they weren't. Because you go into it, one of the first questions you would have for Barnes's representation is, what does he want? And what is the second question is, what are the buyout terms of his agreement with Tennessee? And if that's a non-starter, well, then you never even go down that road. It appears that they went all the way down that road, which tells you that they knew what the buyout terms were and they were amenable to those terms.
Okay, staying in L.A., another interesting story came out yesterday, I believe, also.
This is a medical miracle, which you're about to touch on.
Yes.
A medical miracle is happening right in front of our eyes, and none of us are acknowledging it until right now on this show on 92.9.
And that medical miracle that we're discussing is that, according to the Los Angeles Times, they got Reggie Bush on the record, and Reggie Bush said that this is kind of put up or shut up time for Clay Helton.
Yeah.
But, of course, the salacious part was, should things not go well, and
right.
I think the indications, at least, again, I'm not saying the Pac-12 is like playing in the NFL right now, so they could click.
Good Lord willing, all things will work out, but if they don't.
Should they not, that Reggie Bush and Matt Leinart, who are part of Fox Sports College Football Big Studio Show, their version of College Game Day, well.
Yep.
It turns out that they've got a new analyst joining the fray this year, and that analyst is, of course, none other than Urban Meyer, of course, the retired football coach, the coach that coached his last game at the Rose Bowl, of course.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to say that we both, you and I, called this when it happened,
but we did.
But we totally called this right when it happened. And so. I just find it highly coincidental. And again, I understand the Big Ten's got some tie-ins with ESPN, and one of their bigger tie-ins now is with Fox. But it just seems very, very strange to me that Urban Meyer's first job that he took, keep in mind, after the last time that he had to work on the focus, hashtag focus on the family,
yeah,
he did it at ESPN.
Yeah.
This time he chose to go to Fox, a place that has that show in Los Angeles, California.
Oh, it's in L.A.
Yeah, turns out it is.
So he's got a I think we're being too cynical here.
You think?
I think this is a sick man who is taking a year away to get his health straight, and he's still on the Ohio State support staff. He's going to give some advice sometimes.
Don't forget he's got that class he's got to teach, like leadership and how to and basically how to obstruct justice.
He's just going out to L.A., man, to get some sunshine, you know, get some fresh air.
Listen, we all know the American dreams go west. I mean, it's been written about in our literature since basically we started having American Lit.
Throughout our history.
Yes.
Really, go west, young man. Go west, Urban Meyer. Get well. He's going to go out there and hang out and on the Pacific, maybe get a place in Manhattan Beach. Walk down to the beach, you know, get a snow cone and just breathe in the air, get some of that salt air, get some sun, spend more time with his family, because I think that's very important. It's very important to know that Urban Meyer, he and Shelley, I'm sure there's things for them to talk about, really.
Mm-hmm.
But they're going to get all that worked out.
Deleting text messages.
Now and November. And he's going to have that itch again because he's going to get healthy. Going to get that back's going to get all fixed up.
Well, I don't know if you know this, Neil, but the heart centers out in L.A. are just top-notch. So, you know, the road to recovery is quick and runs basically between I-10 and the 405.
Yeah, you got the Sinai Center.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's going out to get the best medical help, and it's going to work. And USC's going to come calling with – $8-9 million a year and a desire to return to the glory days, and they need a coach who knows how to recruit. I mean, who knows how to coach ball players.
Okay, this is though what I think is fascinating. I don't think it's coincidental because everyone just kind of assumed the way that USC's season played out last year that Clay Helton was more than likely going to be fired. And then reports started to surface that that wasn't the case. And at first you go, huh, except not us. We immediately went, there's more to come. And sure enough.
Yeah, I saw this puzzle.
Right. We solved this one pretty quickly. And then sure enough, the reports right before the Rose Bowl on New Year's Day, the reports were that Urban Meyer was going to coach his last game at the Rose Bowl, and then he was going to retire. And then that's when you and I started really feeling ourselves, because indeed, the plan was coming together perfectly. But ask this, the Pac-12, I mean, Mike Leach has shown you don't have to have unbelievable players to win, and USC's got good talent. Is there a risk that Clay Helton, you know, what if he goes 10-2 and then you didn't pull the trigger on him and now you're sitting here, what do you do?
But I don't know that Meyer could have left Ohio State and jumped right into USC.
I mean, he could have.
But he needed to take a little time away.
He needed to do a Tom Rinaldi sit down.
He needed to take a break because that program got beat up. And then the Aaron Hernandez podcast that came out, the Boston Globe did a fantastic job on that podcast. I can't remember the Gladiator, where Urban Meyer, it kind of comes out just how sketchy of a program he ran in Gainesville when Aaron Hernandez was there. He needed a little break. Everybody's attention span is really short. He gets away from it. He's going to be an analyst for a season. And if you're USC, in fairness, another mediocre season of Clay Helton is worth it if you come out on the other side with Urban Meyer. And Urban Meyer has recruited and won big at Utah. He recruited and won big at Florida. He recruited and won big at Ohio State. And it stands to reason that he will recruit and win big at USC. And if you're USC and all you have to do is wait one season, tank a little bit, if you will, it's worth it.
What makes Urban Meyer different than Art Briles? Because the first thing I remember thinking when the air quotes independent investigation about what happened, of course, with Zach Smith, the former assistant coach, and then Urban Meyer's role in it. The first thing I remember reading when you actually like sorted through it was like, holy cow, how does this guy still have a job? What makes him different than Art Briles? Because I understand that he has national titles, but Art Briles won a ton of ball games at a place you don't win a ton of ball games in Baylor, but he's done. I mean, he was coaching football in, I think, Italy.
Yeah.
What makes him different?
It's a great question. To me, Briles is not hireable when you look at the program that he ran at Baylor, the extent to which he had players committing crimes that he knew were being committed and were covered up. Actively covered up. My guess is that Urban Meyer had more layers of separation between some of the things that happened at Florida and Ohio State. I'm not defending him at all because I actually believe that he knew just what a monster Aaron Hernandez was and did nothing about it. I have no doubt that he knew what was happening inside Zach Smith's house. But for whatever reason, he's been somewhat Teflon as it pertains to his national image. He's won. He's been able to do TV. He's fairly good at TV. He's pretty good with PR. He's a snake oil salesman, but he's pretty good at it. And I guess Briles' stuff was just so beyond the pale that there was no coming back from it. But I do think it's a fair analogy, and it's just, for whatever reason, Urban Meyer's more Teflon than that. And he's going to coach again. He's absolutely going to coach again. He was able to walk away from all that and claim medical stuff because all of a sudden, man, the headaches were really bad. Those headaches are going to go away. He's going to get it fixed. I'm telling you, he's going to get out in the fresh air and some salt water and good medicine.
It's great for the soul.
And he's going to make $8-9 million a year, and he's going to be the USC head coach. And Clay Helton better win 10 or 11 games. Otherwise, they'll pull the trigger on this if they can get Urban Meyer.
God, I wish I would have thought to run the spread option back in 2005. That would have been a better.
Hey, and he'll win in the Pac-12, Jeffrey.
Well, yeah, he wins everywhere.
Like he wins everywhere, and he'll win out there too. And again, if I'm USC, that's a dance with the devil that I'm willing to do right now, because their program is no longer a nationally prominent program. And Urban Meyer walking into their building the day that he crosses the threshold, USC becomes a nationally prominent, prevalent program again. That moment.
All right, and then last thing before we let you go, CBS Sports has come up with their early top 25 for college football, and I hope you're taking a seat for this, Neil. The number one and the number two teams are Clemson and Alabama, respectfully.
You're kidding.
I know. Look at all that parity we have today in college football. Number three, Georgia. Number four, Oklahoma. Number five, LSU. Rounding out the top 10, Ohio State, Florida and Dan Mullen at seven, Texas at eight, Michigan, Shea Patterson, what up, dude, at nine, Oregon with Justin Herbert is at 10. Some other programs of interest from around the area. Texas A&M comes in at 14. Auburn at 22. All right. I'm not sure if this is a half-baked take. I'm not ready to say that this is fresh out of the oven. I think Oklahoma at number four. I've never sipped the Lincoln Riley Kool-Aid like a lot of people do in college football. I think this is a fascinating year for him because he now has a quarterback that, while Jalen Hurts improved last year as a passer, he's still not a good one. He's certainly nowhere near what the type of passer that Oklahoma had the last two seasons.
He's not Baker Mayfield and he's not Kyler Murray.
And more importantly, that was the number one offensive line in all of college football last year. And Kyler Murray had more time to throw than any other quarterback in college football last year on average. I think I'm selling some Oklahoma stock right now.
I'm selling Oklahoma. Look, I'm good 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, whatever.
I get it. I'm not sure what I think about LSU. I think I'm kind of holding right there. I'm okay with Ohio State at 6. I actually think Florida might be a little underrated at 7. And maybe I'm getting ahead of myself here. I just think Dan Mullen's going to win big there. I really do.
Year two, typically in modern college football, year two is a huge year. I think Dan's a very good football coach, and I agree with you.
And I'm okay with Oregon at 10, even though I'm not the biggest Justin Herbert fan in the world. I'm okay there. I'm not good with Oklahoma at 4, and then I'm selling at 8, and I'm absolutely unloading stock at number 9. I don't know what anybody's talking about with Michigan.
I think the thought is you get Michigan this year, gets Ohio State at home.
Right. Shea Patterson doesn't win big games as the quarterback. He hasn't won big games at Ole Miss, and he didn't win big games at Michigan, and he's not going to start now. He's limited. And Harbaugh doesn't win big games as the head coach.
I think I'm telling you what the argument would be is you get Ohio State at home, and then they're going to have a rookie head coach.
I'll sell.
I think I'm with you. All right, and then lastly, what do you do with Auburn at 22? I think they're the most interesting. Remember last year we thought LSU was the most volatile team in the SEC, particularly in the West? I think Auburn's that team this year.
Yeah, Auburn's got a chance to really exceed expectations. I don't think they're good enough up front to do it, though. 22 might be about right. And the problem at 22 is I don't think Gus Malzahn survives that, which means that they get into the latter part of the season and everyone knows that he's done, and the coaching search story is all that's around that program, at which point it's they're a candidate for a free fall. I'll tell you one to be curious about is Texas A&M at 14. I know they're not great at quarterback, but they're getting better everywhere else. And Jimbo's a good coach, and it's year two, and they're completely bought in on the system.
Pun intended.
Yeah, exactly. All the accounts are set up. They're at 14. I kind of like them. Maybe if your over-under is 13.5 on where you finish in the rank, I kind of like them to get better than that.
Yeah, and I think Jimbo's a good coach.
He is definitely a good coach.
You look at what he does with quarterbacks consistently. Like, Kellen Mond looked like he couldn't play under Kevin Sumlin, and now, I mean, he didn't light the world on fire, but you didn't feel like he was a liability for A&M anymore.
No, that's fair. I thought he was okay. And if all you ask him to do is be okay, he'll make some plays, and they're going to be better most everywhere else. They've recruited at a really high level. They brought in a lot of talent last season, a lot of talent. I mean, we opened the hour talking about what Penny Hardaway is trying to do at Memphis. It's what Jimbo Fisher is trying to do at Texas A&M, is just sort of recruit your way through the ceiling. And they're in the process of doing it. They're not quite there yet. They're not even close to it yet. But they'll be talented enough to win some football games.
That closes the first hour with us. Neil, of course, will be with us tomorrow as well as Friday. Make sure you listen to the top of each and every hour. Coming up next, a unicorn cash code for you right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. Bill Bender joins us next. We'll get his perspective on Urban Meyer and his chances at USC when we come back right here on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Memphis has the unicorn players. 92.9 has the unicorn cash. Listen at the top of every hour for the code word. Text that word to 72881. Data message rates apply. National contest. You could win the unicorn cash. Crazy good players. Crazy amounts of cash for you.
That's crazy.
Win $1,000 every hour. Settle up.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.